Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories about safety for both humans and animals. First, United States lawmakers met earlier this month with the top inspector for the federal agency that protects America's flying public. Homeland Security Inspector General John Roth told members of Congress he is deeply concerned about failures in security. His comments follow reports that the U.S. Transportation Security Administration failed to identify 73 workers with links to terrorism. Separately, TSA crews reportedly failed to identify simulated weapons and other dangerous materials in 96% of tests performed at U.S. airports. George Groh has more.
Serious questions are being raised about U.S. air safety and whether the Transportation Security Administration is meeting its stated goal of protecting the flying public. The TSA was created 14 years ago, shortly after the September 11th terrorist attacks against the United States. Homeland Security Inspector General John Roth spoke to a Senate committee about the agency and its work.
We remain deeply concerned about its ability to execute its important mission.
Mr. Roth said his team uncovered what he called significant vulnerabilities in the TSA's job of performing safety inspections at airports.
TSA cannot afford to miss a single genuine threat without potentially catastrophic consequences. Yet, a terrorist only needs to get it right once.
Reports that security problems remain have shocked lawmakers like Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He noted the huge number of safety screenings required.
TSA screens nearly 2 million passengers each day. 2 million passengers each day, nearly 660 million every year. That is an enormous challenge and task.
Some Americans have noted problems they have witnessed, such as a seeming lack of attention to a list of passengers approved for speedy TSA screening at U.S. airports. Rebecca Roaring supervises the TSA office at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport in Minnesota. She criticized the agency for adding so many names to the list.
TSA is handing out pre-check status like Halloween candy in an effort to expedite passengers as quickly as possible, despite self-admitted security gaps that are being created by the process.
Airplanes are also likely targets for easily hidden explosive devices, says Robert McLean, a federal air marshal.
If a terrorist group puts thought into it, it's relatively easy to sneak small bombs into jets in order to blow up at high altitude.
Two air travelers near Washington say they are worried.
I mean, it's horrifying. There's no other way to feel about it.
I'm appalled, frankly. I think that there was such a panic after 9/11 that we just hired a lot of people because we could, and I'm not sure that we did our job in terms of vetting them to begin with.
Delaware Senator Tom Carper says the TSA must do a better job.
We should be focused on perfection. We'll never get there, but that should be our goal.
Recent terrorist plots against U.S. aviation have been stopped. But if things do not change at TSA, lawmakers worry it is only an issue of time before one of those plots succeeds. I'm George Groh.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. On May 19th, a pipeline broke and released thousands of liters of crude oil into the Pacific Ocean and onto California beaches. It will be many years before scientists know how the oil spill will affect the area's ecosystem and environment. But rescue workers are taking action now, helping animals affected by the spill. VOA visited SeaWorld San Diego, the main care center for sea animals covered in oil. Christopher Jones Cruz reports.
The elephant seals and California sea lions do not like staying at SeaWorld San Diego. But its oiled wildlife care center offers these wild animals their best chance at surviving. Jody Westberg is one of the people who have been working to rescue the oil-covered creatures.
Right now, these are two of the most severely oiled animals we have in the area.
This sea lion should be a beautiful reddish color, and what we're actually seeing is little glimmering spots of that beautiful reddish tone of his fur, but the rest is coated in what looks like black tar.
The rescue crews have been working hard to clean the animals so they can return to the wild. It is not easy work. Jody Westberg says the oil spill may have affected the workers too.
This is hard on us. This is hard on us physically, emotionally, mentally. We're putting a lot of time, effort, and energy into getting these animals better, and to see them this impacted, you know, it breaks your heart a little bit.
Todd Schmidt is a veterinarian, a doctor who cares for animals. He works at SeaWorld. He says workers must quickly remove the oil from the animal's skin.
We want to wash it off them so they don't continue to absorb it through their skin or continue to inhale it.
Dr. Schmidt says the animals can suffer lung damage and other health problems from breathing in fumes from the oil. He adds that if a female sea lion absorbs or takes in the oil, her first pup may not live. The oil spill is causing other problems for the sea lions that live in ocean waters along the coast. An unusually large number of the animals have washed up on California's beaches this year. Dr. Schmidt says they are starving.
There's not the food fish available, so they're really scouring the environment to find any type of food that they can.
Dr. Schmidt says many more animals may be dying than the numbers being reported.
There's a lot of animals that we may not be seeing that are part of this oil spill that are not being recovered, and they may be dying out at sea.
Brown pelicans and other seabirds are also feeling the effects of the oil spill. Their feathers hold air that keeps the birds warm. But when oil covers the feathers, the birds' body temperature can drop to a dangerously low level. The oil is heavy and difficult to wash off. But veterinarians say pelicans are strong creatures. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. The leader of the Roman Catholic Church has called for a cultural revolution to save the planet from environmental ruin. Pope Francis made this statement in the nearly 200-page environmental encyclical released on Thursday. Encyclicals explain the teachings of the Church and are guides to Catholic behavior. The encyclical is called Laudato Si, On Care for Our Common Home. In it, Pope Francis writes of the world's economic system as one based on the rich exploiting the poor. And, he says, that system has turned the planet into an immense pile of filth. The Pope writes that the science of global warming is clear. He notes many studies show atmospheric warming is the result of gas releases from human activities for the most part. He warns that climate change is a global problem with grave implications. And he writes it is one of the principal challenges facing humanity in our day. Pope Francis bases his encyclical on the first part of the Bible, Genesis. He says it tells that God created the earth and its riches for humans to use, but also to protect. He says humans are irresponsible in the use of earth's many resources. He says they have understood Genesis incorrectly in thinking dominion over Earth means treating the planet any way they want. The Roman Catholic Church leader calls for a reduction in fossil fuel use and increased investment in renewable energies. He warns against continuing the current models of production and consumption. The Pope also discusses an ecological debt that the rich of the world owe to the poor. He says the wealthy and powerful create more global warming gases, but the poor are the main sufferers of the effects of climate change. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim expressed agreement. He released a statement Thursday that said, "As the effects of climate change worsen, we know that escaping poverty will become even more difficult." Unlike encyclicals of the past, the Pope says that he is speaking not just to Catholics, but to all people on Earth. Achim Steiner is the chief of the United Nations Environment Program. He says science and religion are aligned on this matter. The time to act is now. The Heartland Institute is a U.S. group promoting free market solutions to global problems. It says the Pope made a grave mistake by putting his trust and moral authority behind agenda-driven bureaucrats at the United Nations, who have been bearing false witness about the causes and consequences of climate change for decades. An early version of the encyclical was published Monday by the Italian magazine L'Espresso. It quickly proved to be an issue for U.S. politicians, especially Republican Catholics. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is a candidate for the U.S. Republican Party presidential nomination. He is also a devout Catholic. He said Tuesday that religion should center on making us better humans, and he said he would not look to the church to make his governing policies. Mr. Bush has said in the past that his Catholic faith does guide him in policymaking. In Laudato Si, the Pope says that religious belief, humanity, and the environment are inseparable. I'm Katie Weaver.
Now, the weekly special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Wide Net. It was written by Eudora Welty. Here is Larry West with the story.
William Wallace Jameson's wife, Hazel, was going to have a baby. But this was October, and the baby wouldn't be born until April. Hazel acted as if it would come tomorrow. She wouldn't speak to her husband when he came into the room. If he tried to touch her, she would run away from him or stick out her tongue at him. So one night, William Wallace went out with his friend Virgil Thomas. He didn't come home until the next morning. Hazel wasn't there when he got back. Instead, he found a letter from her. It said she was going to the river to drown herself. He ran out of the house. As he ran, he shouted for Virgil Thomas, who had just gone into his own house. "I've lost Hazel," William Wallace cried to his friend. "She went to drown herself in the river."
"Why, that's not like Hazel," said Virgil.
William Wallace reached out and shook Virgil.
"We have to drag the river with the wide net."
"Who will we get to help us pull the net through the river?" Virgil scratched his head.
"I'll get the Doyles and you go get the Malones," he said.
They met again 15 minutes later. "Here come all the Malones," said William Wallace. "I asked 4 of them to come help, but the rest of the family invited themselves."
"Don't they always do just that?" said Virgil.
From the other direction came the Doyles, with the eggs from their breakfast still on their faces. The whole crowd went to see Doc. Old Doc owned the wide net. He had a house on top of the hill, and he sat outside it on his rocking chair.
"Now what?"
he asked when everyone had arrived and stood in front of him. William Wallace stepped forward.
"If nobody else is using your wide net, could we use it?"
Virgil Thomas pushed William Wallace aside.
"We got reason to think William Wallace's wife is in the river, drowned."
Doc gave a long, low whistle.
"Hazel is the prettiest girl in Mississippi," he said. "A golden-haired girl. I never saw a prettier one. Never will."
He got to his feet and said,
"I'm coming with you."
They followed a path that took them through the deep woods and to the Pearl River. They walked in silence near William Wallace. They would not let him carry anything. Soon, the smell of the river spread over the woods.
"We're in the changing time," Doc said. "Any day now, the change will come. It's going to turn from hot to cold. And Old Man Winter will be standing in the door."
They walked on, and suddenly they reached the river. Everyone stopped. But Doc talked on as though nothing had happened.
"Only today," he said, "today in October sun, it's all gold. The sky, the trees, the water. Just before it changes, Everything seems to be made of gold.
William Wallace looked down. He thought of Hazel's shining eyes. He could see her in his thoughts, sitting at home like a piece of pure gold, too precious to touch. The men began to unfold the wide net. It was very old and had been used a lot. There, in the October light, it looked golden, too. Since the net was so wide, it was able to reach across the entire river. Splashing sounds filled the air. The Malones, with great groans, swam across the river. The Doyles stayed near Virgil Thomas. Each group grabbed an end of the net and began walking along the riverside. Doc got into a rowboat and followed the parade from the middle of the river. William Wallace swam in front of the wide net, diving down underwater. The dogs chased up and down, in and out of the water and in and out of the woods. Where the light fell on the river, it trembled gently. The willow trees leaned over the water. Their long branches hung like green waterfalls in the morning air. The men were catching lots of fish in the net, big ones and little ones. William Wallace caught more of the big fish than anyone else. He and the others put ropes through the fish's mouths and pulled them through the water behind them. They caught other things, too. Old shoes, a lady's necklace, and a baby alligator.
"It's time we ate some of these fish," said Virgil.
They all gathered by a clearing near the river and built a fire. Then, among clouds of smoke, they cooked and ate fish. They ate until they all were so full they couldn't eat any more. And then, one by one, they all fell asleep. The thunder woke them up. Lightning flashed and the sky looked black. All color left the world. The golden afternoon was just a memory. A wind touched each man on his forehead. They ran under some trees as hard drops of rain began to fall. The rain fell heavily. When the sudden storm ended, the men looked up the river ahead of them.
"Look," said Virgil, "we've come almost to town."
There, just beyond the trees, was Dover. It had rained there, too, and the town looked somehow like new. The wavy heat of the late afternoon came down as the men entered the main street. William Wallace walked through the town as if he did not see or hear anything. He carried his great catch of fish high so that everybody could see it. Virgil came next, imitating William Wallace exactly. Then came the Doyles and the Malones, tossing their fish in the air. Behind the entire crowd walked Doc. The whole town of Dover came out to watch the men. People came out of their houses, the stores, and the post offices. "Did you ever see so many fish?" said the people of Dover. As the sun went down, Doc climbed the hill to his house. He sat down in his rocking chair and lit his pipe. William Wallace hung up the wide net, while Virgil Thomas waited for him. Then they both went to say good night to Doc.
"Well, now," said Doc when they came up, "I've never seen a better river dragging."
"But," Virgil objected, "we didn't catch Hazel."
Doc took the pipe out of his mouth. "She wasn't there," he said. "Girls don't like water, and they don't jump in rivers just because they're angry with their husbands. Remember that." William Wallace looked up. "Didn't you think this morning she had drowned herself?"
"Not even once," Doc said.
Virgil and William Wallace walked home slowly. When they reached Virgil's house, Virgil said good night and went inside. William Wallace was alone. When he got to his own house, William Wallace saw something he had never seen before in his life. There, curved over his roof, was a rainbow at night. The moon was out, and its light fell on the little rainbow. It made William Wallace think of a lady's summer dress. The stars showed through the rainbow. William Wallace walked into his house. Someone called his name. The voice came from the bedroom. "What do you want?" he yelled. Then the bedroom door opened, and there was Hazel. She had not changed at all. "Supper is ready," she said. "I was wondering if you were coming home tonight. Go wash yourself for dinner." They sat on the front steps of their house after dinner. "Where were you this morning when I came in?" asked William Wallace. "I was hiding," she said. "I had just finished writing the letter." He looked at her. "Did you watch me while I was reading it?" "Yes," she laughed. "I was so close to you that you could have put out your hand and touched me." He bit his lip and pulled her into his arms. "Do you think you will do it again?" he whispered, holding her tightly. She tried to free herself for a few seconds, and then she suddenly relaxed in his arms. "I'll do it again if I feel like it," she said, smiling into his eyes. It was as if he had chased her and captured her again. After a few minutes, she took his hand and led him into the house.
You have just heard the story, The Wide Net, written by Eudora Welty. It was adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis with permission from Russell and Volkening, Literary Agents, New York. This story is copyrighted, all rights reserved. Your storyteller was Larry West. For VOA Special English, this is Shirley Griffith.